Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison.
Here.
Vice Chair Jacque.
Here.
Ranking Member Woodson.
Yeah.
Representatives Abbott.
Here.
Amnesty.
Here.
Antone.
Here.
Bartleman. Black.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Mello. Salzman.
Here.
Skidmore.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Trabulsi.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Emma. I want to welcome all my colleagues back to the Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee for this legislative year. It's a pleasure to have you on this committee. I'd like to say we're the hardest working committee in the Florida House, and I appreciate all of your diligence and your willingness to continue to serve. Before we get started today, I'm going to have a few remarks to kind of frame our discussion, but I do want to recognize our new Vice Chair, Bernie Jacque, from the great county of Pinellas, and we're glad to have you in this role, and I'm excited to have you as part of our healthcare appropriations team. No pressure, but your predecessor is sitting to your right, and you know, she's taking detailed notes to make sure you live up to the standards that she expects on behalf of the good people of Pensacola, so no pressure. Members, today we're going to begin hearing presentations from our agencies regarding their legislative budget requests for the upcoming 24-25 fiscal year. But before we do that, I think it's always helpful at your first committee meeting to get an understanding of a roadmap of kind of where I think we're going to be going this year. And I'd like to take just a minute to do that, and also to encourage each and every member of this committee, to know that my door, and I know the door of the ranking member, are open. And I love the culture that we have established on this appropriations subcommittee. I didn't create it, I inherited it from others, to make this a very productive and collaborative committee. It has to be, because we spend, on average, give or take a few billion, approximately $45 billion last year, Brian, of taxpayer dollars, which is a little over one-third of the entire state budget of the state of Florida. I have not fact-checked this, what I'm about to tell you, but that's a great story, so I hope it's true. I was at a conference a couple months ago with a legislator from the state of Tennessee, and we were talking about healthcare issues, and I kind of casually dropped that we spent about $45 billion on healthcare in Florida, and he started laughing. He said, "You understand, Sam, that's more than our entire state budget." Just, you know, our healthcare budget in Florida, assuming he's telling me the truth, sounds right, is more than the entire state budget of most every state in the United States. It's crazy when you think about it. That is an awesome responsibility that we share with our colleagues in the Senate, and I really want to encourage us to take that very seriously. The good thing about legislative terms is, because they are 2 years, I view this year as a continuation of the work that we started last year. Last year's budget, I think we made some great strides in particular areas, to coming out of in a post-COVID world, making sure that our healthcare dollars reflect the priorities of a changing and evolving world. This year, I'll just tell you, as your chair, there are, I think, three primary areas that I would like us to focus on. These are not an exhaustive list. It's just my thoughts. Certainly, your priorities are just as important as mine, but I want you to know where I'm driving from. The primary issues in the area of behavioral health. Today's Behavioral Health Day on the Capitol, as many of you know, and I was glad to see a lot of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle out front with our behavioral health providers, many of whom are in the audience here, talking about the importance of that issue. We have a number of champions for mental health on this committee, Representative Salzman, Koster, Trabulsi, Campbell, others have really made that a signature issue for their service in the legislature. And policy is great, but policy without money, just a good idea. So we need to make sure that our spending in the area of behavioral health is done in such a way to return maximum return on that investment for the constituents that each of us serve in our districts. The problem, I firmly believe we could spend every single dollar we have in the state of Florida on behavioral health and still not be able to address the needs of Floridians. There's not enough money in the world to be able to fix some of these problems. With that being said, we have to be strategic in how we approach this issue. I've been quoted and will stand by that for me, this is a multi-year project to make sure we have a coordinated approach to our behavioral health spending, both on substance abuse and mental health, in such a way that we're thinking 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road for the challenges, not just of this generation, for the next generation. Because unfortunately, until we figure out as a society how to deal with these things, the impact on our kids and our teenagers, our young adults, is going to continue to be a challenge for us. So, but it is a very, very big issue. And as with any big issues, you know, the old adage, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time, right? And so our focus this year is going to be on what I consider that part of the behavioral health spectrum, specifically in the area of mental health, individuals that I think are the most acute. By that, I mean most in need of care. We can't fix this all in one year. But I'd like us to focus our emphasis on the folks everyone agrees are in crisis and desperately need help. And, you know, part of that's going to be looking, I think, is our state mental health hospitals. Do we have the right number of beds? Do we have the right patients in those beds? And are we providing the highest quality care at the lowest possible price to the taxpayer? And so in so doing, treat as many of those Floridians who are in desperate need of care. I think that's going to be an area of focus this year. I value your input and your ideas as we kind of work through those issues. Secondly, the second big issue I think we're going to deal with this year and talk about is issues of transparency. You know, that's a big deal for me. Our healthcare system in the United States is a challenge. Understanding the price of goods, understanding what things cost and how much ultimately as taxpayers we're paying for those goods are a challenge. And we talked last year about issues related to the healthcare transparency website. I know a number of you mentioned that. Was it one of our best presentations? We had a lot of questions that we're going to get back to this year, and I look forward to getting in more in depth on that. I'll say specifically as it relates to anything related to transparency. You know, data that doesn't drive decision making is just busy work. And so the questions I would like us to look at is, number one, are we getting the data that's necessary for people to make decisions and inform real choices they have? Or are we just having people doing busy work? I have no interest in the latter and a great interest in the former. I know members of this committee do too. So we're going to be focusing on that. And then ultimately, when you have a $45 billion budget, it's important, all the good that happens and all the good that providers are doing to help Floridians, we have to make sure there are appropriate accountability measures in place, that those dollars are being spent in a way that is consistent with what we expect of any time government's getting involved. So those are the three areas we're going to be focusing on from my perspective. You know, mental health, transparency, accountability. I value your input as we kind of work through these things and see how that's reflected in the House's budget. But I'm excited and ready to get to work and really appreciate every member of this committee. Now, with that being said, I'm going to transition here and just say that, you know, that we write the laws and we put the budget in place, but our executive agencies on a statewide basis are responsible for executing that. And our statewide agencies across all areas of the budget, not just healthcare, are seeking a little bit over $5.8 billion of additional general revenue spending above the base that we established this last budget year, and about $22.8 billion of additional trust fund spending over that same base level this year. That's a lot of money, obviously, but the need is also great. Within our subcommittee, the healthcare agencies under our jurisdiction are requesting an additional $780.8 million in GR, as well as a $1.6 billion in trust funds. As we listen to the presentations today from three of our executive agencies that really do a lot of the bulk of the work in our area of our budget silo, I want to just set the stage and remind each of the members and everybody in the audience and anybody who's watching at home, remind everyone about the long-range financial outlook that was issued earlier this fall by the Legislative Budget Commission. I'm honored to serve on it. A number of you were part of that hearing over the summer. That outlook focused primarily on the state's general revenue fund, and it showed that we are in good shape as a state. Our budget's in good shape through prudent management and conservative financial principles over a number of years. And we have positive ending balances projected for the next 3 years. And that's good news. We should celebrate it. However, the outlook also revealed that our projected expenditures over the last few years are beginning to start outpacing those revenues, particularly for the out years and with recurring spending. And, you know, the laws of economics are undefeated. So members, this means that we need to be cautious and mindful, not scared anyway, but just be cautious. And as we develop this coming budget and mindful of those out years impacts on our spending decisions to make sure that, we're in 7 years of plenty, we need to be prepared for 7 years of want. And that's a tale as old as time. So let's continue to bring that approach forward. So with that context in mind, we're gonna be hearing from three of our six agencies today, the Agency for Healthcare Administration. I see Kim and Tom out there. We're gonna have to call them up in just a second. Department of Children and Families, Tony Loy, I think our Assistant Secretary is here, as well as the Department of Health. These agencies are going to provide a presentation to the members of the committee on their legislative budget requests, give you an idea of what they're seeing on the ground and what needs are for this coming year. Member, I hope you'll give them your close attention. Just understand that this is kind of this is the first pitch of a nine-inning game, but it's an opportunity to frame the issues going forward and see what they're seeing on the ground. And then we'll continue to work through our next meeting with some additional requests going forward and then kind of work for more some issue-based projects we're going to focus on this year. I just would remind you, again, on these presentations, your questions are encouraged. I'd ask you to kind of just hold off until the end of each particular presentation, and then we'll do questions at that point in time. But again, we want to make sure we have sufficient time for everything. And just to keep things sporty, I have to step out in about 15 or 20 minutes. So Vice Chair Jacques, in his maiden voyage as the Vice Chair of the Healthcare Appropriations Committee, is going to take the gavel at about 12:05-ish. Be gentle with him. But with that, we're going to move forward. So I'd ask for Tom Wallace and Kim Smoke, whoever's presenting for ACCA, to come on up. And while they're doing that, I was remiss. I forgot. I always try to do this, but I want to say thank you again to our sergeants for the work you do to keep all of us and our visitors safe in the Capitol. In a dangerous world, we appreciate you all. So thank you for what you do. And I see Mr. Wallace on behalf of the Agency for Healthcare Administration. Sir, you are recognized.
Great. And thank you, Chair and members of the committee. Glad to be here today on your first committee meeting. I think I was presenting on one of your last ones you had like 8-9 months ago. But so it's good to be back in front of you guys. As Mr. Chair said, I am Tom Wallace. I'm a Deputy Secretary at the agency. I'm here with Kim Smoke, who is a Deputy Secretary over Healthcare Policy and Oversight. Together, we're known as Smoke and Wallace, so hopefully you enjoy our presentation here today about our LBRs for 24-25. So our agency's overview, just high level, I know you've seen this before, but we are the state's chief health policy and planning entity. We administer the Medicaid program, and we license and regulate over 50,000 healthcare facilities. And to support all these functions and improve access to healthcare and enhance integration among the agencies, we are leveraging technology through our Florida Healthcare Connections program. Our agency objectives are to run and administer the most cost-effective, transparent, and highest quality programs that we can. And the requests that we'll be presenting here today will continue to meet our obligations on that and objections. So our first agency's request for 24-25 consists of some Medicaid recurring priority issues. So the Social Services Estimating Conference principals meet to develop caseload and expenditure projections to assist in the budgeting and appropriations process. And Mr. Chair, to your right there, you do have a principal on that estimating conference sitting there. And so he's a part of these projections of what you see up here on the screen. So the adjustments to workload, which is caseload and utilization, and price level, which is unit cost changes, are agreed upon during that estimating conference. The August conference results estimate an increase in Medicaid workload by $356.5 million. On the KidCare estimating conference, KidCare workload was $232.6 million. And then in terms of our price level increase on the Medicaid side, it was $559 million increase. This is a request that really it's a cost to continue the Medicaid program. This is really the only item that the legislature really needs to appropriate to us each year. However, I'm about to show you some other items that we definitely would like you guys to consider in your budgets. And the first one here is having to do with, it's an agency initiative having to do with enhancing our recruitment, retention, and stability of our agency workforce. As you know, this past session here, a lot of new items came out of that legislative session. I think, Mr. Chair, you kind of alluded to, it's your job, it's the legislature's job to put in place different items here that you want the agencies to implement, and we're responsible for implementing. We've had multiple things that we're working on implementing, and to help us out with that, we are asking for some additional type of increases to some of the pay adjustments of our current staff. So the first request, it's in three areas, and the first request is an ask of $5.4 million for competitor pay adjustments to support pay increases for the agency's financial services and regulatory oversight group and various bureaus within the division of the Medicaid program to address critical needs at the agency. On average, the Division of Medicaid pays 12% below other state agencies for comparable position titles, which with other economic challenges has resulted in a current vacancy rate as of last Friday of around 23% in the Division of Medicaid programs. In terms of regulatory oversight, their vacancy rate is roughly 17%. So on the regulatory oversight side, there are requests here to kind of raise the increase of some of these positions that they currently have. They have what we consider a health facility evaluator position. They are doing the same type of duties as public health nutrition consultants and registered nurse specialists, but are paid at a considerably lower value. So we're asking to increase those and reclass those positions to that higher level. We are currently have a total of 22 health facility evaluated supervisor positions. This small increase will bring these closer to the average salary for the registered nurse consultant supervisor position in all of our field office. These are similar positions requiring the same level of training and understanding and survey practices on a regulatory enforcement side. So that's kind of the request there. The second request is for $2.1 million, and this is to support reclassification of existing full-time employees that we have to address basically the new workload requirements that I alluded to a little bit ago here. And we're looking to increase procurement staffing, program for all-inclusive care elderly staff, Medicaid long-term care pilot was a new program that came out last session. We need staff to fund that. Our Florida Healthcare Connection staffing, dual special needs, and behavioral health. And so what this is, we looked at our agency's current vacancy rate. We had about 47 vacant positions. So we're taking those 47 positions, reclassifying them, giving them a little higher salary to do those duties I just explained there. So it's not a new request for new positions, it's just reclassing and getting some more rate and salary to support that. And then lastly, we are requesting $750,000 to provide additional staff support by the way of a staff augmentation, which will be split between the two different divisions in the Medicaid program. And with that additional support, this would assist us with our high staff turnover and to help us implement some of these programs that were passed in the past legislative session. Now moving on to an agency policy initiative here, and this is a behavioral health redesign program. This is a Florida Medicaid program covers a comprehensive range of behavioral health services. So we're looking to do a behavioral health redesign with that. But funding is needed to support the changes to address areas and certain gaps in intensive treatment for children with the integration of physical and behavioral health. So the behavioral health redesign issue has two parts to it. And one of them is to ask for contracted services dollars of $300,000 to help get a vendor to help us develop and implement a tiered reimbursement model for our statewide inpatient psychiatric program. That's our SIP program. The new model should incentivize in-state providers to expand capacity by increasing their reimbursement to more difficult areas to treat these recipients. And then additionally here, the second part of this request is to request funding to be able to reimburse providers who provide collaborative care between primary care and behavioral health care. So it's a collaborative care code. There are four codes that are collaborative care codes that the agency currently does not reimburse. So this is a request to start funding those codes. And so by adding this coverage, this will improve the mental well-being of our Floridians and avoid high-cost care by paying primary care docs to spend extra time with psychiatrists in a weekly claim management meeting. Next, we have a series of technology and system upgrade requests here. The first one has to do with our Florida Healthcare Connections, our FX program. I think everyone's well aware of that. This is a request that we provide or ask for each year. This is for the implementation of phase three of our FX program to replace our fiscal agent contract. And so phase three began in December of 22, and it's scheduled to be completion with our final certification of the FX program in fiscal year 26-27. Services will be rolled out throughout the process related to recipient services, then provider enrollment, claims and encounter processing, and then pharmacy claims processing. Next, an IT project request is for an e-discovery solution services. This is a replacement of our current Clearwell legal e-discovery solution that has been unstable and expensive to maintain. Our internal auditors had done a review of this Clearwell system, and they have indicated that there's an urgent need for processing these requests. So we are asking for $800,000 to help us move to another program here. Next, we have a Cloud First initiative, which is an initiative that it's a statutory compliance that we have to meet. So in order to meet that statutory compliance, we're requesting $850,000. The agency has submitted its annual statutory required cloud strategy report for 4 years now, and the standards towards government-related IT cloud providers and improve IT security, IT risk, and discovery recovery for mission-critical systems. So this is a request that we're asking for. Still on the lines of IT here, our division of IT has not really seen an increase in the past 3 years in terms of the contracted services category. So we're looking to increase that by $825,000 to account for increases in inflation that we've been experiencing. So IT has a lot of staff aug contracts, a lot of software contracts. You know, they have to run the agency, all the software for the agency. A lot of that stuff has gone up in price, while the division of IT has not received any increases for that. So there's a request there of $825,000, like I said, to help us in that aspect. The next item is the Enterprise Florida Ecosystem Maintenance. And I will kind of combine that with the last item on there, the Florida Planning, Accounting, and Ledger Management, the POM Readiness Review. These are standard requests that we've asked for some time now each year, and the legislature has graciously appropriated that for us. So this is just a request to continue those services from prior years. You know, budget and contracted services is requested, which will continue these services to enhance our Sun Focus system, that's our finance and accounting system, along with the integration of the new POM system. And Mr. Chair, with that, to explain the background screening clearinghouse, I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Secretary Smoke, and then she'll continue on.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Smoke, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Garrison, Vice Chair. Thank you for allowing me to be here today to go over our legislative budget request. The first one I want to talk about is our background screening clearinghouse, the request for $5.4 million supporting an additional 20 FTE positions and staff augmentation to integrate the Department of Education and other qualified entities into our background screening clearinghouse, as required by Florida statutes. The agency currently processes the screenings for the Department of Education and qualified entities. Just to explain what qualified entities means, it's the Voluntary Employee Criminal History Services, or VECS, is what we refer to it as. These are companies that have employees that provide care to our most at-risk population, but aren't regulated by another state agencies. So examples might be contractors who go into schools, which would be our coaches, our vending machine employees, our other school staff. So this will double the current workload handled by the agency. Currently, the agency processes over 500,000 screenings per year and handles over 800 calls and emails per day. Department of Education and qualified entities averages nearly about that much, 500,000 screenings per year, and their screenings have increased by average of nearly 20% in the past year. Based on those numbers alone, the screenings that ACA will process will at least double. We determine these numbers based on information received from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, as all screenings go through FDLE and then to the agency for that eligibility determination. Currently, we have 20 FTEs that process screenings or handle the management or administrative duties associated with processing screenings. We maintain or try to maintain a 5 to 7 day business day turnaround, and we will need at least the additional 20 FTEs to continue that rate. The clearinghouse has never experienced a decrease in volume except for the pandemic year, and we expect the trend to continue. We're going to move forward now to some legislative budget requests specific to emergency operations. The first one is a request for an incident command trailer at $191,000, funding to support the purchase by the agency of a trailer to act as a command center for our staff who are mobilized to disaster zones. Post-incident, specifically after a hurricane, our staff, our field office staff around the state, are required to travel to areas of the state that suffered the most damage to do post-assessment visits in our licensed healthcare facilities, specifically our residential facilities. Oftentimes, there are not hotels available, grocery stores, or other facilities available. So we need access for our staff for a safe location wherein our staff can work and reside during these events when there is no lodging option available to us. In the past, our staff have not been able to find hotels and have in most cases resorting to sleeping in their cars or driving for over 2 hours just to get to the impacted area in order to conduct the post-assessment visits due to lack of hotels. This would allow our staff to be staged around the state in the impacted areas prior to the impact of the storm, in which they are not able to find hotels for us to be able to quickly, once it's safe, to enter our healthcare facilities to assess damage to ensure our patients, clients, and residents are safe after the impact of a hurricane. Just to give you an example, Hurricane Idalia that passed through our part of the state here, we conducted over 236 post-assessment visits in our healthcare facilities. So just to kind of give you an example of what we do after the impact of a storm at our agency as far as the post-assessment visits. Next on the request under emergency operations is aeronautical reconnaissance coverage geographic information system. That's a mouthful. We'll refer to it as ArcGIS for $211,000. So this software would provide our staff not only the ability to promptly respond to circumstances, but potentially predict geographic areas of need down to the specific facility level for surveyor presence, as well as evacuation. Our agency staff would be able to work with other agencies, including the Florida Department of Health, to to ensure patient safety during transport and evacuation of our residents, patients, and clients from our residential healthcare facilities in the impacted area. This would really be a cost-effective or an efficient use of resources to allow us to utilize this software to overlay for our healthcare facilities, utilizing this software to identify those facilities in the path of the hurricane and to not only identify those in mandatory evacuation zones, but also in flood zones as well. The next request for emergency operations from the agency, our health reporting system, we refer to that as HFRS. We're asking for $133,000 to support enhancements of our health facility reporting system to provide the capability of texting providers regarding preparedness activities and concerns during an emergency and post-incident of any disaster. Currently, if our healthcare providers do not respond to our requests through our automated messages, through our agency alerts, or through HFRS, or report timely as required, our agency staff must take the time to call providers until they can reach a responsible staff person. This is extremely time-consuming for our staff and sometimes takes multiple attempts or calls before contact is actually made, which is a serious concern when time is of the essence, as you know, during the time of a disaster or serious weather event or other emergent situation. Just recently with Hurricane Idalia, our staff in our central office did outbound calls to over 2,600 of our healthcare facilities. That's statewide, but over 2,600 calls made outbound by our staff to get providers to report their status. In addition to our healthcare facilities, as we know, during the time of prior to the storm or impact or after the impact of a storm, our healthcare facilities, as we want them to be, are focused on patient care. That's in patient safety. So by providing this resource to us to allow text messaging, we do know and have through past storms know that text messaging is the best way to reach our healthcare facilities. Lastly, our agency-wide security system under our emergency operations. This is for $650,000 funding to support monitoring from central systems for all of our agency field office locations. We have 8 field offices around the state. This would include camera surveillance, emergency operation, badge readers, door security, and visitor security. Currently, the alarm and camera and door security at our agency's field office are a mixed array of various service deliveries without a centralized approach. The potential solution provides vehicle and person camera capture. This allows the agency to not only respond to disputes, but also provides brand new capabilities such as persons of interest, creating an alert to security should a previously identified potential threat enter our building or other monitored area. Another example is that the centralized approach would allow our headquarters staff here in Tallahassee to perform security monitoring on behalf of the field offices, including during the time of a disaster. We have a pilot study for a fully software as a service SaaS, serves as a cloud-based service or cloud-hosted delivery model for IT applications that software users access via the internet. This solution is cloud-first performing, as I mentioned, and does allow for security and surveillance devices to oversee centrally by our office here in Tallahassee. And this process approach leverages solutions, which would include maintenance and support as well. Additionally, centralizing the physical security solution will help prevent inefficiencies in a non-integrated approach such as the agency has today, and will help us to respond to security recommendations provided to the agency during audits, which have identified physical security improvements to a critical need area. One of the last things I want to talk about is healthcare transparency. So healthcare transparency, we have a couple of items on here that we are requesting additional resources for. healthcare transparency website enhancements and modifications, $750,000 to support data enhancements and updates to our healthcare transparency websites to continue providing the most current information for our consumers. So this funding will allow us to support data enhancements and upgrades to our healthcare transparency websites. All of you may be familiar with those websites, our Florida Health Finder, MyFloridaRx, and Florida Health Price Finder. Enhancements will include additional data sets added for consumers to make better informed healthcare decisions, improve navigation, and the addition of new transparency tools. For example, we will be adding over 100 care bundles, which will bring our total to nearly 400 common services. In addition, we will also be adding new payer information to our consumer data sets. These data sets often come with an annual licensing fee. And we will also be able to add new pharmacy data for providing more commonly prescribed medications on MyFloridaRx. Our healthcare transparency website marketing and outreach for $1 million. This is funding to support the continuation of the agency's marketing and outreach services through the completion of phase two of our enhancements for our healthcare transparency websites. We started some of this earlier this year. This request will continue to allow the agency to spread awareness and education on the information consumers can view on our websites. The funding will be to promote new updates and building on the marketing and outreach efforts of earlier this year of 2023. And as many of you may recall, earlier this year, actually in February of this year, I provided a presentation to the House Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee meeting. And during that meeting, we received some recommendations from legislators that this funding will help us deliver on. A couple of those recommendations included improving the search engine optimization to improve discoverability of the website with the use of keywords and marketing for the website. Additionally, improving the mobile view of the website to make it more user-friendly on mobile devices. Since the start of the advertisement, on June of 2023, we have over 88,000 visits to FloridaHealthFinder.gov on this landing page. Comparatively, in May of 2023, prior to us doing all this outreach, we only had 322 visits from that same month. Probably a lot of those were probably internal from us staff. We would be using some of the same funds to continue building on the momentum from the 2023 marketing campaign. The next one, the third one on my list here today for healthcare transparency, are hospital immigration and nursing home financial data collection. Our Florida Nursing Home Uniform Reporting System, also referred to as FNURS, and for both of these systems, we are requesting $585,000. In 2021 and 2022, for our FNURS system, Section 408.061 was modified to require require nursing homes to report financial data that would be submitted to the agency, along with an audit similar to what is required for hospitals. A system was built, a rule language was adopted, which is effective November the 1st of this year, to implement the data collection. The agency has a total of four staff that process hospital financial data. The data collection is cyclical, and with the vast majority reporting for December the 31st and September the 30th fiscal year ends. Review of the data can take up to 3 months. There are over 2.5 times as many nursing homes as hospitals. However, we're only asking to double that staff to handle this volume for the FNURS as well. The hospital immigration piece. As you know, Senate Bill 1718 was passed earlier this year in 2023, requires the agency to collect data from hospitals, both admissions and emergency department visits from Medicaid participating hospitals. We only collect one thing: how many people were there, here legal or not, as a hospital admit or hospital emergency department visit. A couple of things, the four items that we are required to collect at the agency include: indicate a citizen of the United States, indicate it lawfully present in the U.S., indicate it was not lawfully present in the U.S., and decline to answer. The agency was giving no funding to build or to maintain a system to collect this data. So without a system to collect this data, we will have staff copying and pasting data from individual emails over 1,000 per year. So that's our hospital immigration and for nurse request for support. The last one is County Health Department Information Exchange System for our healthcare, to round out our healthcare transparency requests. And this is for $887,000. This funding would support our partnership with the Florida Department of Health to share through the Florida Health Information Exchange. This partnership would allow the implementation of an electronic records system supporting all 67 counties. As we know, connectivity to the Florida Health Information Exchange services allows for that exchange of patient medical alerts with partners and participating providers to improve that continuity of care outcomes. This means all the county health departments, which includes over 1 million Medicaid recipients statewide, have their emergency room visit alerts being sent to county health departments in their area, in real time. This will allow the county health departments to take quick action and to quickly in order to prevent rehospitalizations and unnecessary emergency room visits. This is really a pass-through for us at the agency. We currently receive these funds from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and we need the spending authority to transfer those funds to the Florida Department of Health. Additionally, these funds also pay for the 67 county health departments treat and release. This was a major gap filled by these funds, which means when an ambulance shows up to treat someone and they refuse to go to the hospital, those encounters were not being made known. We now capture that encounter and share with a healthcare entity that the patient has provided consent for. This service is not limited to just Medicaid recipients in the state. With that, I think that rounds out our legislative budget request from the Agency for Healthcare Administration for 2024-2025. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smoke and Mr. Wallace, for your presentations. I will now open it up to member questions. I recognize Ranking Member Woodson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the opportunity, and thank you so much to both of you for your presentation. Mr. Chair, can I be recognized for two questions? Thank you. Thank you very much. The first question that I have has to do with page 6, actually, of the presentation where you discuss the redesign model. You are requesting $8.56 million to conduct the behavioral health redesign. Did you take into consideration when you are looking at the redesign model that you are proposing, did you take into consideration the recommendation of the Florida Commission on Mental Health that asked that we expand Medicaid to young people up to age 26 in order to make sure that more people have access to behavioral health?
You're recognized.
Thank you, and thank you for that question. This request here was something that we have been focused on internally at the agency. So there was no review of that Mental Health Commission report when we determined that we wanted to proceed with funding these four collaborative codes. So this is just really funding those four collaborative codes that we currently don't cover to offer these collaborative care services, and that's what the issue is doing.
A follow-up question to that question, Mr. Chair?
Yes, you may.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Don't you believe that would be an important thing to consider, especially something that important when we have the Mental Health Commission, we've been tasking them to come up with those recommendations? Do you have any plan to do that with your team to make sure that's included in there?
You're recognized.
Thank you, and thank you for that question. As you saw from our request here, we have a lot of items out there. There's a lot of things that we focused on coming up with our LBR request. And internally, when we went through everything, you know, what we come up with on this behavioral health redesign is what we felt like is the best approach at this point in time.
Thank you.
Representative Salzman, you're...
So my second question, that was just the first. I said, can I be recognized for two?
That is true. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, sir. So please consider that question. So my second question has to do with the immigration model that you process. So I know this is a lot for y'all. You're all dealing with a lot, but those questions are important to us. regarding, I know the bill was passed and you have to come up with plans and everything else. Did you get any feedback from the hospitals and the patients about this new requirement? And what steps have you taken to ensure that the collection of the information regarding that bill, Senate Bill 1718, is conducted in a manner consistent with Title VI of the 1964 Act, you know, Title VI? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Everything that comes to the agency, we obviously do our level best to ensure protection and confidentiality of any data, specifically any, health information-related data for the HIPAA requirements. So we would do that. You know, can I stand here today and go point by point of what we've done? No, but I do know that that is part of our day-to-day routine with when we collect any sort of data.
That's part of the question. The other part was, what feedback are you hearing from the hospital?
You're recognized. Thank you.
Have we received any feedback? We went through rulemaking. I mean, we would be going through some rulemaking for that. So that would be the appropriate time to gather any feedback from anybody that's interested.
Thank you, Chair.
I now recognize Representative Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you guys for your presentation today. It was so great to see your faces. It's been a while. I have three questions and a couple of comments. The first will be for Tom. Y'all mentioned that you have a 20%, I believe, or 23% position vacancy. And I just want to for you to just explain to us how that directly impacts access to care. How does it affect the patient?
You recognize.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for that question. Well, so like I said, we have a lot of different items that came out this past legislative session that we have to work on. We have that long-term care pilot program. You know, we have an effective date of that, I think, in the law of January 1st, and we're doing everything we can to get there. But having less staff on staff to do that, you know, kind of puts a hinder to that. You know, we're trying to adhere to all these deadlines. We have multiple requests to work on. And so being that 23% vacancy rate does hurt in trying to meet those exact deadlines, which impacts the patients.
Thank you. And then still to you, Tom. So we're talking about the behavioral health redesign. You had went into some details on that, but you didn't mention DCF. And it's my understanding that that would be a direct partnership with DCF. Am I correct?
You recognize.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for that question. On the first part where I referred to the SIP rate redesign, we did have discussions with DCF on that because that has been an issue with them, and they have talked to us about that. So I believe, and they're going to come up here at some point, and I believe they will be supportive of that as well. So we have had that discussion.
Thank you. I'm just looking at the potential of a long-term community-based treatment facility, not a state-ran facility. We've been trying to muster a plan up for that for the state because we have none in any region. And that caught my attention. And I know that in speaking with the other secretary in DCF, that you guys were working together on trying to figure out how you guys can combat some of that access to care issue that we've been facing. Finally, the last question I have is for Smoke. I love the Smoke and Wallace thing. That's cute. So what's the 20% increase in background screening related to? You'd mentioned that. I know that you're not Department of Education, but did they allude to why we have all of these increased background people trying to come in as contractors? Or are they trying to replace teachers that would or faculty that would have normally been staff? Like, do you have any insight on that?
Recognize.
Thank you. Well, the insight that I do have is that we have been we have been meeting with Department of Education and gathering information through them and through the FDLE. That's how we've gathered that their screenings are about as many as ours in addition to the anticipated increase.
Thank you. And just a huge shout out. Thank you so much for your work you did. I mean, it's really nice. And there are several members of this committee that were here last session and remember the big, long conversations we had about the SEO and all that. And I mean, what a great testament to how we work together. We give you feedback, and that sounds like a phenomenal increase. And we were all like whispering to each other. Thank you so much for listening and doing that, because it really does affect the patient and that access to care model. So thank you so much. And that is all, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, in the interest of time, we do have two more presentations. Questions can be submitted to committee staff, and we'll be able to gauge you from there. Thank you. hearing. We will now hear from Mr. Tony Lloyd. He is the Assistant Secretary of Administration at the Department of Children and Families. Mr. Lloyd, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon. I am Tony Lloyd, Assistant Secretary for Administration, and I am pleased to present our legislative budget request for fiscal year 24-25. The department provides a wide range of services to some of the most vulnerable populations in Florida, and our requests for new or continued funding all relate to achieving one or more of the four areas of focus that are on this slide. As I present these issues, our desire is in requesting these funds are to improve our clients' experience, to increase accountability and transparency, to enhance our workforce stability, or to increase and access to and responsiveness of our services. This slide table is an overview of our request for new funding, totaling $442 million, organized by major program. Our department's current budget, for some context, is $4.8 billion, of which approximately $2.8 billion is general revenue. To provide some perspective of the $245 million in general revenue included in our ask, approximately half of these new funds are for hospital staff augmentation or for FCO for our hospital campuses. These issues are actually currently funded with non-recurring in our current budget. So if you strip those dollars out of the mix, this request is about $150 million in new GR, which is roughly 5% of our GR total. In the area of child welfare services, our largest request is for $25 million for CWIS modernization. We are in year two of the project's funding, and we are on schedule with completion of the intake module this month. The investigations module is scheduled for completion in November. And after completing these modules, the year two focus will move to case management. This request, $25 million, is for third year funding, which will allow us for the creation of the case management module, service planning module, and independent living modules, as well as reporting and analytics. Overall, this initiative is projected to be completed within 4 years if all the requested funding is continued. We are excited about the expansion on independent living. We're excited about the expansion for independent living for our foster youth. Funding request is for $8.1 million. Currently, we expend about $52 million on post-secondary services, aftercare, and extended foster care services. This funding will allow us to lower the age of eligibility from 16 years to 14 years and extend services to an additional 746 youth. This will allow the department to serve in total over 2,000 youth and provide access to these benefits for a longer period of time as our youth age out. In the current year, the department received $20 million for local prevention grants, which will benefit about 40 communities with $500,000 grants. We're requesting an expansion of 6.7, which will expand the program to another 13 or 14 communities, and they can benefit from it. We are requesting $13 million in authority for the Criminal Justice Act Task Force, which will allow us to spend residential grant balances that have been accumulated in this area. We're also requesting $1 million to migrate, historical hotline records at our call center. Department is requesting funds to assist in providing higher level of services to survivors of human trafficking. This first issue, which is just under $5 million, will provide an additional 48 emergency beds statewide. Currently, there are only 13 emergency beds. And then this past year, we were able to serve 229 individuals. This issue will greatly expand our capacity. The second issue is for 9 FTE. Currently, the department has 3 FTE for our 6 regions, each covering 2 regions. This will provide that we'll have two FTE for each of our six regions, which will enhance statewide training, assessments, prevention efforts, and improve best practices. One of the department's key areas of focus is improving domestic violence, survivor outcomes, and expansion of services. The first issue is increasing the funding for the STOP grant for $8 million. These funds will go into a series of contracts that increase support services within the criminal justice system and enhance their services to the survivors. These funds will be used to provide training, technical assistance, and batterers accountability specialists. The next issue for $10 million is additional funding for our DV shelters statewide. In 2022-23, our DV shelters were unable to provide transitional housing services for 3,816 survivors. This funding will allow us to address the emergency housing needs for an additional 1,335 survivors, which will reduce the unmet need by 35%. As a frame of reference, the total funding for our DV shelter statewide from DCF is approximately $36 million. And this is approximately the same level of funding that these shelters have been on since 2018. In community mental health services, we are requesting increased funding and federal grant authority to continue expanding the capacity for crisis services through our 988 lifeline. 988 currently has funding of $11.8 million. These issues are to address the anticipated growth rates and that we are projected to have over 173,000 contacts on this service by June of 2025. We are projecting a need for 335 counselors to support this level of contacts. Our goal is to increase funding up to $21.4 million. We are requesting expansion of these services through three funding sources. The department has allocated first $8 million out of our Sam H. Block grant. The second is to provide authority to use the 988 State Territorial Improvement Grant, which is the $7.9 million. And lastly, we'd ask the legislature to provide $5 million to finish the gap to get us to $21 million. The 988 service currently has a diversion rate of 96% of getting people to off of a higher level of need to a lower level of need. So it's a very successful service. The department is also asking for $11.5 million to support adding additional 16 teams to our mobile response teams. The department currently employs 51 MRTs, and this additional funding will provide a total of 67 teams at about $720,000 per team that will give us statewide coverage for every county. The MRT data shows us that these teams have an 82% diversion rate in terms of de-escalating situations. In economic self-sufficiency, we are requesting funds to enhance our call center capabilities, enhance fraud protection, and modernize our technology for a better client experience. The first request for $10 million, $2.5 million of which is GR, is required funding for the Federal Data Services Hub. This is a federal data hub that we are required to use to ensure Medicaid applicants are eligible. We project 1.1 million billable returns will go through this hub. The federal government has been covering 100% of that cost, but starting in 2025, they will ask the states to pick up 25% of that cost. The Florida modernization issue for $6.6 million in GR is one of our two major IT projects, and this will be requesting the third year funding for this project. We started this project at the same time as CWIS, and we are also on schedule with this IT project. In year one, we completed the enterprise architecture, client portal, and worker portal. With the current year funding, we will complete workload management and ADI documentation. With this requested third year funding, we will complete critical mainframe migration activities. This is a massive IT project, and the legislature has funded $36 million to date. By funding this request, it will expedite our completion, but this is a $180 million project. So we anticipate this is going to take 5 or 6 years to complete. These other requests relate to improved call center operations, contract staff augmentation of $6.2 million, will support an additional 64 contract staff to assist in answering over 8 million phone calls. The $550,000 for text messages will support approximately 86 million inbound or outbound text messages, with the goal of reducing the volume on our call center. And then thirdly, third issue provides funding for AI enhancements that can handle some of the calls coming into our center, which would free up our actual staff to handle the more difficult calls. We are requesting $1.5 million to complete a front-end fraud detection process through a third-party vendor, and this will eliminate the current pay-and-chase system. And lastly, we're requesting $1.5 million to cover increased operational costs in our mailing center, where we mail out 15 million mail-outs a year to our customers. Cost of postage and all has increased. Opioid prevention, recovery, and treatment initiatives. These issues are all under the opioid settlement funds. Just as a reminder, these are the settlement funds from the court settlement that are being coordinated through the Attorney General's office. These funds arrived last year. The first tranche of money to the state of Florida was $205 million. And over the next 17 consecutive years, we should be receiving anywhere between $85 and $92 million a year. We worked with other agencies, the provider networks, and the legislature to determine allocation of these funds in the first year. These are continuations of those allocations of these funds. The one I would point out is at the very end, the bottom one, core funding, $5 million. It was actually $26 million in the first year. This would increase that funding to $31. Information technology program support. This includes $625,000 for us to be prepared to convert into PALM. Just like every other agency, we need to prepare our financial business systems to do that transition. The second issue is information technology licensing renewals. It's not very exciting, but the reality is our licensed software costs have gone up 51% since 2021. And the last issue is for the wireless access point replacement. That will be used to replace 875 WAPs, which will give us better connectivity and security function. Interstate hospitals. Our largest request is for $77.8 million to continue contract staff augmentation into next year. With these funds in the current year, which is approximately the same amount of money, we have been able to open an additional 253 beds at our facilities, and in January we'll open an additional 139 beds. We will be able to significantly reduce or eliminate the wait list for placement in our facilities. So with this continued funding into next year, we'll be able to staff our critical positions and keep those beds open, which should either eliminate or significantly reduce the wait list to get into our facilities. Four other issues in here are all tied to patient safety. The safety and security upgrades will provide cameras, fiber optics, badge swipes. The anti-ligature improvements for $4 million will do a lot of replacing of old doorknobs where people could self-injure themselves. The replacement of medical equipment, which is at its life's end, and replacement of patient furniture, which is essentially old platform beds, which also can cause a danger to some of our patients. Finally, we are requesting $12 million for electronic health records. This is a two-year project that will help us eliminate the paper, modernize our clinical and business processes, and improve health information and advance the quality of care. Under workforce stabilization, one of our most important components in the child welfare system is our CLS attorneys. There are over 500 CLS attorneys that work for the department, keeping the child welfare system moving through the courts. We're competing to attract attorneys that are drawn to public service, but they're also competing with state attorneys, public defenders, the attorney general, et cetera. With our compression funds that was afforded to us by the legislature, we used some of that to try to increase their pay. This passed and it goes into effect in October, but we're still chasing those other state agencies in terms of pay for our attorneys. So this issue would allow us to try to keep pace with that. And then the last two in our Office of Licensing, we're requesting the conversion of OPS positions to FTE, which will help us recruit and retain good employees. In our Office of Child Care Readiness, we want to add 8 OPS or contracted staff to provide the levels of staffing we need to meet the national standards. And finally, this is continuation issues. With the exception of the first, which is fixed capital outlay, where we're requesting $42 million. Again, some perspective, we operate 3 large hospital facilities around the state. There are large campuses, a lot of buildings. Our total CIP is about $120 million over 5 years. Legislature was good enough to provide us about $12 million in fixed capital. I know it's always a battle as to how much fixed capital we can lay out. We have a request for 42. We will look forward to working with you to try to keep the facilities up. Our youngest facility is over 50 years old, so it's a challenge. The remaining issues that are on this sheet are all what we used to call cost to continue issues, cost of living adjustments for maintenance adoption payments, adjustments to cost of living for foster parents, guardianship assistance program, et cetera, and adjustments to the state block grants based, the block grants based upon funding levels. That concludes my presentation, Chair. Take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lloyd. In the interest of time, we have time for 2 member questions. Representative Bartleman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Very quickly, my question a concern revolves around the call center. You were given $3 million last year from this current fiscal year from the state. You did not utilize it. And will your money be used to assist our non-English speakers? Unidos USA did a study called our call centers, and Spanish speakers wait time is 2.5 hours, which is 4 times more than an English speaker. So what are you going to do around that? Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question. I have the Deputy Secretary, Casey Penn, who's been more closely involved with call center operations, if you don't mind allowing him to respond to that.
Mr. Penn, you're recognized.
Thank you, and I appreciate the question. We're aware of the report. Looking at our call center wait times, you know, depending on the day, the wait times differ in the different categories. I will say that there is typically not a significant difference in the average wait times between Spanish and English speaking, maybe 5 to 10 minutes. We do have a language line available for everyone to be able to utilize, as well as English, Spanish, Creole versions of chatbot, online application, and assistance in store. So it's always something that we're keeping an eye on, like how do we make sure we have the right mix of individuals in the different languages in order to serve our customer, our clients the best way possible. As far as the funding is concerned, we are utilizing all of our funding. As a matter of fact, we're going to come back to the LBC in December and ask for more. So we do have all of our OPS funding as well as our staff AUG currently being utilized. One of the requests here that was made for call center for vendor support is actually to maintain the current vendor support that we have. So we're spending about that much right now on additional vendor support. This is to maintain that while we then implement those AI functions that we hope are gonna help resolve some of the wait times.
Thank you, sir. Representative Skidmore, you are recognized for a question. No? All right. Representative Mello, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Lloyd, for your presentation. On page 9, of your presentation, you're talking about naloxone. And last year, we passed a bill to make sure that Narcan was in our universities. It's my understanding that our Sheriff's Department and our first responders have stronger doses of naloxone available to them, but our community providers do not. Through DCF, and I just would like to know why, with the fentanyl issues that we have currently, how can we get these stronger doses of naloxone to our community providers?
You recognize.
Thank you. We've got our Assistant Secretary for Substance Abuse and Mental Health may be better equipped to answer that question. Thanks.
Good afternoon. Please state your name and then you're recognized.
Good afternoon. I'm Erica Floyd Thomas. In response to your question, we plan to open a bid to be able to receive all products, including Narcan, Zimhi, Kloxxado, and other products that you're speaking of.
So, I'm sorry, Chair, follow-up?
Yes.
Thank you. So, if I understand you correctly, our substance, our use providers in the community would then have access to naloxone as well as our first responders.
Absolutely.
And I'm sorry, Chair, one more follow-up?
Well, one more, and then we have to move on.
Okay. And it's also my understanding that the higher doses of naloxone are actually less expensive than Narcan, for example. Do you know that?
Recognize.
Thank you. Off the top of my head, I do not know the pricing for that, but our goal is to make sure that we get the best competitive pricing. But we will be opening that access so that we will have all products available so that those individuals who are part of our overdose prevention program will have access to any product necessary, including the higher dose.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lloyd, for your presentation. We will now hear from Ms. Cassandra Paisley. She's the Chief of Staff at the Department of Health. Ms. Paisley, you are recognized.
Thank you so much. Are we ready? Let me see. Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Jacques. I've spent a lot of time learning how to say your name, and please tell me I got it right.
Correct.
Thank you. I serve as Chief of Staff and Deputy Secretary at the Florida Department of Health. Thank you for the opportunity to present the Department of Health's legislative budget request. The department's mission is to protect, promote, and improve the health of all people in Florida. We are requesting $33.4 million in general revenue and $33 million in trust fund authority, representing a 2% increase to the department's base budget. I will highlight some of the department's budget requests that will aid the department in fulfilling its mission, including the protection of our public health infrastructure and the modernization of our data systems. The department is committed to improving maternal and infant care in Florida and are working alongside our sister agencies to provide resources to Florida families. The department requests $465,000 in general revenue, of which $87,000 will be recurring for the development of the Strong Florida Moms Initiative. Maternal and child health resources are across multiple agencies. The goal of this initiative is to have a uniform one-point stop so that any parent can have access to this information in a quick and informative way. In addition to having websites from other agencies, there will also be information regarding prenatal care, stages of pregnancy, warning signs that indicate that there might be an immediate issue of concern, and developmental milestones for children. Okay. So I think what I will do is highlight a couple of initiatives on each of the page and make myself available should there be questions on others in order to respect the time period. Another initiative on this page that relates to Chair Garrison's priorities is the Children's Medical Services grant funding. That funding is currently, we have behavioral health hubs where experts are assisting primary care pediatricians with the delivery of services. It's in Miami-Dade, Orlando, and Gainesville. Our goal is to expand those resources to Jacksonville, West Palm Beach, and Northwest Florida. On this page, all of these initiatives are very important, but the Merlin system is the one I will highlight. Merlin is the Department of Health's disease surveillance system. The department is requesting $2.9 million in recurring general revenue. This system is the state's repository of reportable diseases, and the system provides automated notification regarding individual diseases of high priority, Ebola, Zika, malaria, and that allows our experts to focus on those diseases in order to rapidly detect, monitor, and effectively respond to multi-county and multi-state outbreaks of diseases. I would like to discuss both of these initiatives. That these proposals relate to innovation in public health strategies to support diagnosis, prevention, and treatment. In 2017, the Florida legislature enacted the Florida Stroke Registry. The department has received $1 million in non-recurring GR annually for the last 5 years. We are requesting that that $1 million in funding become recurring. The Florida Stroke Registry is instrumental in helping Florida's healthcare providers develop and share best practices and improve efficacy in stroke care. According to 2024 provisional data, stroke was the fourth leading cause of death in the state. With stroke, time is essential. For every 1 minute delay in stroke treatment, up to 2 million brain cells can be lost. We know early treatment means better outcomes for survivors and lower death rates. In 2017, approximately 54% of stroke patients statewide were treated within 45 minutes of arrival to a hospital. In 2022, with the aid of the data from the Florida Stroke Registry, this increased to 80% of Floridians receiving treatment within the 45-minute window. Recurring funding of this registry can continue to lead to better health education to prevent strokes, improve care, and reduce stroke-related deaths in Florida. The Department of Health is requesting $5.3 million in recurring general revenue to enhance the FOCUS project. HIV, hepatitis C, and syphilis are difficult to diagnose without routine screening. Stopping the HIV epidemic and reducing the burden of hepatitis, syphilis, and congenital syphilis are all important major goals of the department and the State Health Improvement Planning Committee. Unfortunately, currently half of those diagnosed with HIV have the infection for at least 3 years before they know. 25% have it for at least 7 years before a diagnosis. Similarly, patients with hepatitis C and syphilis can have minimal symptoms early in their disease. This means much of the ongoing spread of these three diseases come from individuals who do not know they have the infections. The FOCUS initiative centers on routine opt-out screening in the emergency department for these three infectious diseases, which drastically improves the discovery, diagnosis, and linkage to care, treatment, limits further spread of their disease, and earlier diagnosis leads to improved outcomes for those who have these conditions. Currently, this program is in four locations: Homestead, Hollywood, Tampa, and Miami-Dade. We would like to expand to 15 more high-impact hospitals. Okay, so these are our data systems. I'd like to focus on our Florida cancer data system. The Department of Health is requesting $789,000 in recurring general revenue to strengthen and stabilize the Florida cancer data system. This system is a statewide registry dedicated to collecting and maintaining comprehensive data on cancer cases in Florida. Florida is the third most populous state, and cancer remains the second leading cause of death. On average, there are 46,000 cancer deaths and 133,000 newly diagnosed cases of cancer. The registry supports public health efforts to reduce cancer incidents, improve patient care, and enhance the quality of life of cancer survivors. Florida strives to be the first state to comprehensively capture data on cancer recurrence, which is important due to many cancer survivors may receive a subsequent cancer diagnosis. The requested funding will improve the registry's completeness, data quality, and data dissemination. Data modernization. think we will talk about the Early Steps data system here. So Early Steps was on a previous slide. This is a program that serves infants and toddlers birth to 36 months. These individual children have either a developmental disability or a developmental delay. It's very important that we link these children to services, have a program that we can appropriately evaluate so they can go on to have the most successful life for themselves and their families. This is the data system. We're in the final year of creating a new data system. The original data system that we're operating in right now is from 1981. What this system will do is create a comprehensive administrative system, not just a data collection system. And this is all of the initiatives are very important, but some of them I wanted to just have a conversation with you. The department made a concerted effort to ask for only what we truly felt we needed. And we thank you for your time. I speak quickly. I hope you understood a little bit of what I said, but I'm here and available for any questions you might have.
Thank you for your presentation. Unless there is something very pressing at the moment, I would encourage members to follow up. Is it Ms. Paisley? Ms. Paisley, for further conversations. Otherwise, thank you so much for your presentation.
I appreciate your time.
We'll now go to public comments. We'll recognize Acadia Jacob with Florida Voices for Health, wishes to speak on the overview of the DCF budget.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. I'll be very brief. I'm just here to remind you about the lives behind some of the numbers we've heard today, and to share in regards to one aspect of this budget about a family of sixth-generation Floridians who dealt with the call center issues with DCF. Landon was diagnosed with leukemia at age 5, and his redetermination notice arrived in March on the 20th of 2023, right before a $30,000 lumbar puncture. His mom, Erin, tried calling the DCF call center daily, was on hold for hours at a time as a working mom. She said she simply didn't have enough hours in a day to wait on hold. Their story isn't unique. She was able to finally find out he was eligible, he does have his care, but a reporter reached out to DCF. That's how she got the confirmation. Our state has yet to draw down this $3 million allocated for improving the call centers, ensuring they're well-staffed, that they can assist with call volume. And I just wanted to underscore this need for Erin and so many others. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Members, this concludes the agenda for the committee this afternoon. Representative Abbott moves that we rise. Seeing no objections, the committee is now adjourned.